election outcome was by and large representing the will of the people of Myanmar.
That finding deals a blow to the stated reason for Myanmar's junta. It's Tuesday, May 18th, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman. Also ahead, the U.S. places more sanctions on Myanmar's military. As NATO and U.S. troops leave, fighting intensifies in Afghanistan. Americans struggle over when and where to wear face masks. Controversy over flights carrying Australians from coronavirus-hit India. Worldwide, more people are dying from overwork. It is all on today's VOA Asia. Myanmar's general election in November was by and large representing the will of the people, concludes the report of one of the few international observers that monitored the election in the country. Before the Myanmar parliament was supposed to seat for the first time since the vote, the military seized power in the early hours of February 1st, using claims of mass fraud in the vote to justify the coup. But Asian Network for Free Elections found no evidence that the irregularities would affect the overall outcome of the election. That according to Lee Chung Lun, who took part in the report.
The main issues that we found in this election was the election cancellation issues, the censorship of campaign speech of the political parties, as well as the persistent impression of bias of the UEC against opposition parties. But overall, it is NFRL's informed opinion that the election outcome was by and large representing the will of the people of Myanmar.
Lee said, yes, there was some evidence of fraud.
We observed some inconsistencies in the implementation of voting procedures and vote counting procedures, but the overall process was transparent, where the election observers and agents from political parties were able to monitor in the polling station to monitor the entire voting process and vote counting process. So we find no evidence that the irregularities would affect the overall outcome of the election.
The United States on Monday imposed fresh sanctions on Myanmar's junta, targeting the governing State Administrative Council and 13 officials in the latest in a series of punitive actions following a military coup. The Southeast Asian country, also known as Burma, has been in crisis since the military seized power from Aung San Suu Kyi's elected government on February 1st, with near daily protest and a crackdown by the junta in which hundreds of people have been killed. The U.S. Treasury Department, in a statement, accused the SAC, formed a day after the coup, of being created by Myanmar's military to support its unlawful overthrow of the democratically elected civilian government. You can find out more by checking our website at voanews.com, as well as all of our social media platforms. VOA Asia continues. Fighting between the Taliban and Afghan government forces resumed Sunday in the rest of southern province of Helmand, according to officials, ending a three-day ceasefire agreed to by the warring sides to mark the Eid al-Fitr holiday. Violence has soared as the United States military presses ahead with a plan to withdraw all of its troops by September, bringing an end to a 20-year military operation in Afghanistan. Clashes between the Taliban and Afghan forces erupted early on Sunday when the insurgents attacked security checkpoints in the outskirts of Lashkargah, the capital of Helmand province, according to the provincial council chief. An Afghan army spokesman in the south confirmed fighting had resumed as the three-day temporary truce ended late on Saturday. The Helmand governor's office said that 21 Taliban fighters had been killed in the morning fighting. Washington has vowed to end America's longest war, but missed a May 1st deadline to withdraw agreed with the Taliban last year in return for security guarantees and a promise to launch talks with the Afghan government. President Joe Biden pushed back the date to September 11th, exactly two decades from the terrorist attacks in the United States, which led Washington to invade Afghanistan and oust the Taliban. We are happy you're with us on VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman. Americans are grappling with the guidance by the CDC late last week that if they are fully vaccinated against the coronavirus, then for the most part they can go without a mask outside and inside. Michelle Quinn has more.
Just 1/3 of the U.S. population is fully vaccinated, and 1/4 consistently tells pollsters they don't plan to get one of the 3 available vaccines. So Americans, retailers, and health officials were surprised last week when the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention said fully vaccinated individuals could go without face coverings, with a few exceptions. CDC Director Rochelle Walensky says the guidance is about individual responsibility.
If they're vaccinated, they are safe. If they are not vaccinated, they are not safe. They should still be wearing a mask or, better yet, get vaccinated.
Some public health leaders criticize the guidance as too abrupt and confusing since it's not clear who is vaccinated. The Biden administration has said it won't create a national vaccine passport. The new CDC guidance has revived discussion around a vaccine card so that businesses and others know if people have been inoculated. Walensky says the guidance is not permission for widespread removal of masks, but for each person to take their health into their own hands. For the unvaccinated, the guidance hasn't changed, she said. Last week, U.S. President Joe Biden, appearing without a mask, alongside Vice President Kamala Harris, described the updated guidance as a great day for America. The CDC's guidance spurred change throughout the country, with some retailers dropping the mask requirement for vaccinated shoppers. Others say they will maintain their current rules as they review the guidance. A union representing 1.3 million food and retail workers said the guidance could put its members at risk.
What we're asking our businesses to do as they are starting to think about the guidance as to what this means for their workplaces is to make it easy for paid time off for their employees to get vaccinated.
Not all states are ready to loosen their rules, and masks and social distancing are still required on planes and other public transportation. Meanwhile, some states and businesses are coming up with novel ways to encourage people to get vaccinated, such as free train rides, pints of beer, and even money, as they try to return their communities to normal. Michelle Quinn, VOA News.
VOA Asia continues. The first repatriation flight carrying Australians from coronavirus-hit India after the lifting of a 2-week travel ban arrived in Darwin over the weekend. The government in Canberra has said the controversial measure has worked, but it has been condemned by rights groups. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
Passengers hoping to fly from India home to Australia must return a negative COVID-19 result on 2 tests before they can board a repatriation flight. The Qantas plane from Delhi to Australia's Northern Territory Saturday was only about half full. About 80 people were on board. Others were turned away after either testing positive for COVID-19 or being in close contact with someone who contracted the virus. Those allowed to return will have to quarantine at a former mining camp at Howard Springs in the Northern Territory for 14 days. The repatriation flight marks the end of a controversial travel ban. Australians had been threatened with jail or a heavy fine if they returned home from India in breach of biosecurity conditions. The ban was condemned by some politicians, human rights groups, and the Indian diaspora as immoral and racist. Officials said it was necessary because of the high level of coronavirus infections among travellers returning from India, which was putting strain on Australia's mandatory quarantine hotel system. Prime Minister Scott Morrison says the travel ban has been effective.
That pause has done its job. The number of cases that we had up in Howard Springs at that time was over 50. It's now down to 4. So they're ready. Also around the country, we saw the number of those with active cases in quarantine fall from 292 to 171. So the system is ready to respond.
Up to 1,000 Australians are expected to be repatriated from India on official flights by the end of June. It's estimated that 10,000 Australian citizens, permanent residents and their families are stranded in India. Australia has taken a hardline approach to the pandemic. It closed its borders to most foreign nationals in March 2020 to curb the spread of the virus. A quarantine-free corridor with New Zealand is allowing unrestricted travel between the two neighbours. Australians wanting to leave the country must have government permission. Citizens and permanent residents can come home, but they face mandatory hotel quarantine when they arrive. About 30,000 coronavirus cases have been recorded in Australia since the pandemic began. 910 people have died, according to the health department. Mass screening has also been a key part in the country's COVID-19 strategy. More than 17.4 million tests have been carried out for a population of 25 million people. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
You're listening to VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Now on VOA Asia, a growing number of people around the world are dying from heart disease and stroke because of overwork. The new World Health Organization, International Labour Organization study says that. The study is based on data from more than 2,300 surveys collected in 154 countries from 1970 to 2018. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
The study says those working at least 55 hours a week are at higher risk of dying from heart disease and stroke. In 2016, the data show 1 in 10 people around the world, or 450 million, worked excessively long hours, leading to 745,000 heart disease and stroke deaths. Frank Pega, a technical officer in WHO's Department of Environment, Climate Change and Health, says this is a 29% increase since 2000.
We know that this burden disproportionately affects men. 70% of all deaths from cardiovascular disease occur in men, according to our official estimates. Also, the regions that are most affected are Southeast Asia and the Western Pacific. And we can tell you that it appears that middle-aged and older workers are disproportionately burdened.
The study reports most recorded deaths are among those aged 60 to 79 who have worked for 55 hours or more per week. The lowest recorded number is in Africa, which has a young population. It says Europe and North America have the lowest occupational disease rates. It says this is because people in these regions are largely covered by employment protections that limit the number of hours they work. The new analysis highlights the impact the COVID-19 pandemic has on workers who increasingly are working from home. Pega says teleworking and the digitization of work appear to be speeding the trend toward long working hours.
We have some evidence that shows that when countries go into national lockdown, the numbers of hours work increased by about 10%. We also have a sort of massive increase in digitization of work. And digitization of work might actually make it harder to disconnect. Rest periods and personal periods might need to be scheduled when you're working online, right? Because otherwise you might be working very long hours.
Health and occupational safety officials urge nations to consider the well-being of their populations as the world enters the post-COVID recovery period. They say governments must ensure that recovery measures are not pursued at the expense of the health of workers. They say governments should introduce and enforce laws that ban mandatory overtime and ensure limits on maximum working times. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Each year in Hong Kong, in the lead-up to Buddha's birthday, turtles are released into the wild through a practice known as mercy release. Conservationists say the superstitious practice could be doing more harm than good. More from Reuters' Flora Bradley-Watson.
The practice, known as mercy release, is believed to bring good fortune to people. However, the good intentions of the superstitious can often result in more harm to the animals than good. Many of them are intentionally captured and sold, just to be set free. They can get hurt and be left stranded in murky waterways, where they normally don't belong. Lai and his group of volunteers snorkeled through muddy waters to save dozens of turtles left there by residents. They are now nursing more than 60 injured turtles in their homes. While mercy release is not illegal in the city, authorities say the practice can spread diseases and poses a risk to ecosystems.
Flora Bradley-Watson reporting. You've been listening to VOA Asia. Thank you for joining us. Thanks to our service chief, Diane Gao. Our VOA Asia team includes Doug Bernard, Amy Heibels, Jim Stevenson, and Keith Lane. I'm Ira Melman. Enjoy the day ahead and stay safe.